Welcome to SEC Sports Roundtable, episode 162, Dynasties Are for Crazy People, recorded Thursday, October 8th, 2015. Tonight, Shane Bailey is joined by Nick Jones of Bama Hammer to take a look at the SEC. They discuss the psyche of the SEC fan and why there's no need for alarm. They also take a deeper look at who has the chance to emerge on top on both the east and west sides of the SEC and meet in Atlanta. And while not even halfway through the season, there are a few teams starting to separate themselves. All this and more on tonight's SEC ESRT. Welcome to SEC Sports Roundtable. This is your host, Shane Bailey, back to talk a little SEC action. So for those that are stumbling upon this for the first time, the way we do this is we talk a little football, basketball. We even do some baseball, but we do it from the fan side. So we have allegiances. Joining me tonight, I have Nick Jones. Welcome, Nick.
It's good to be here, Shane.
I'm glad you've made it. And then Nick is an Alabama fan. He even writes for an Alabama publication, Bama Hammer. Myself, I'm a Kentucky guy. So we are going to be a little bit slanted, but we bring you lots of information, and we hope in a format that's one that you're going to enjoy. So we're going to mix things up and do things a little differently, kicking off this podcast. We've done weekly. The way we've done this in the past is we've looked at each week, broke down last week's performances, then take a look at the week ahead. But we're going to just kind of go right into things tonight and go all over the place. So we're going to probably go back and forth and maybe hit a team or two once or twice about different discussions of their performances and what they've got to look forward to, and just give you some general information that way. And then we will look a little bit ahead because there are some matchups this weekend that are vitally important to a couple of programs. And so we will hit on that as well. So let's get right into things. As an Alabama fan, Nick, I think you probably have to be ecstatic at the performance that Alabama gave last week at Georgia between the hedges. I think they controlled that realistically from the beginning, the way the game unfolded. I look at it a little differently. I mean, I've been high on Georgia. I've been high on Mark Richt, and that might be my East bias that comes through, but as great, and I'm not going to take anything away from the way Alabama played, but it really just changed because there were a couple of plays that didn't go Georgia's way. Alabama was able to capitalize on it, and then all of a sudden the game was out of control. But overall, if you look at the way Georgia played, aside from those few mishaps and that deep ball was gorgeous, yeah, that Coker threw. I mean, that dagger there, those type of plays, except for a few of those, Georgia handled themselves fairly well, especially for not only the atmosphere that they had to deal with Alabama having to prove that they are a national championship contender in the eyes of the press. Nick Saban let us know about that this week. And everything that Georgia has to play for in the East. But, you know, it's not jump off of a ledge if you're Georgia. Up here, everybody's saying that Tennessee still got a shot against Georgia, and I'm going, wake up. For as bad as they played, or as bad as they lost, they didn't play bad, and Tennessee is in shambles right now. I think they're in a spiral that they're going to have to find a way to get out of. Beating Georgia can do that, but I don't think they have the talent any longer to be able to do that, and I never, from the beginning of the season, thought that Tennessee had that kind of talent to compete for the East. But any given Saturday is a different ballgame because, I mean, look at what Ole Miss came up and laid an egg down in Florida. And to me, that was some smoke and mirrors on Florida's standpoint because I watched them very closely when they played Kentucky. And for Kentucky to have given that game away within the first minute and a half of the game, driving down, losing a touchdown pass in the end zone, then turning the ball over, and they march down and score, that completely changed. That's a 14-point swing that Kentucky gave Florida in the first 4 minutes of a ball game that they lost 14-9. and for everyone knows Kentucky's woes over the past, you know, two decades or so. Kentucky's not beat Florida in 28 years. So they had an opportunity right there to beat Florida. So while Florida is improving, I'm not buying everybody what everybody is saying about how great Florida is. Just like I'm not buying in that everybody's saying how bad Georgia is. And I just was throwing that all out real quick. But what do you think?
Yeah, you know, it's a really dangerous situation because you heard if you guys were watching the broadcast, Vern and Gary kept saying, you know, look at the bright side for Georgia, right? This game, sure, it would have been great to win. Sure, it would kind of establish Georgia as the mainstay on the east side and, you know, defeating Alabama, putting them pretty much out of the West race. If you look at it, I mean, that would have probably had repercussions of Alabama, maybe even losing a third game if we would have lost. But I think you're right. The thing is, you know, we're still all banking on that Georgia is going to respond well. And I'm not saying that they won't, but it's really difficult, like we saw with Alabama. Alabama could have come out and played angry and could have turned the ball over, especially in those situations, the playing, you know, situations with it raining. And they were able to channel that frustration, that loss to Ole Miss, pretty well, as we saw. But, you know, I don't think Tennessee is an issue this week, especially with what's occurred, you know, even just this past week. And, you know, the wheels seem to be falling off, like you said, for Tennessee.
Well, and they lost Pick Howard today. This week he was dismissed from the program.
And my biggest thing is, you know, Georgia can look at this two ways. You can look at it with a very positive side and say, hey, we wish we could have gotten that game. It's terrible to be kind of run off the field, even though you said they didn't play that bad. I think I would agree on your own field. But, you know, you can come back the next week and say, hey, we still got the East to play for. And if somehow Alabama survives the SEC West, we can get a rematch. But look, one loss Georgia team in the SEC championship, if they found their way back and were able to win an SEC championship, they're still very much in the national race. Now, right now they're sitting at 19, which doesn't seem like they're in the playoff race at all. But with the East the way it is, and like you said, with Florida, everybody's talking about Florida now being the front runner. I mean, I will give Florida credit. I talked about it earlier this year, or, you know, in our preview, I thought Florida was going to be much improved over the coming years with Coach Mack, and I really like him. He is an Alabama guy. That's one of the reasons, but I think it's a little too early. But, you know, you have to realize, I don't know if Muschamp would be doing this with this team right now. So,
oh, I guarantee that wouldn't be the case. Yeah. No, but they're much better than they were last year and would be this year under Muschamp. But I'm not buying that they're still the best team in the East now.
Yeah, but yeah, and my point is, I've already said it, but with what Georgia has, all the talent that they have, if Lambert can get you know, the ball rolling again, just playing his type of game, not having to make big plays and letting Nick Chubb do the rest, because let's face it, the East is their strong suit, definitely isn't defense, except for Florida. They've got everything to play for. This was their game. It was a big game. They wanted to win it. They didn't win it. You know, if you're Coach Mark Richt, you've got to say, well, let's shift our focus. We've still got, you know, a wide open division to play for that could put us in a very good position going forward.
Yeah. I mean, you say they're 19th, and that's a long way to climb, you know, week six. But I just pulled the AP up real quick to take a look. And you look at the different programs out there. You know, Michigan is setting at 18. That is a completely different program. But, you know, what happens if they lose to Ohio State at the end of the season? Georgia can win out and leapfrog them. You look at a team like Notre Dame, who had some problems on the East Coast against Clemson, right? Is that who Clemson was this week?
Yeah, they lost to Clemson.
Yeah. Ole Miss, you know, we saw what Florida just did to them. They definitely have the potential to have another loss. I know Mississippi State has to be licking its chops right now after watching that tape on Ole Miss. Alabama, they still have LSU, right? So there's probably another loss out there for Ole Miss. Northwestern, is it smoke and mirrors for them to be 5-0, sitting in the top 15? Florida, you know, they will get to play Florida at the cocktail party. Texas A&M, You know, there's an opportunity there. LSU, you know, that's where you get real, gets real troublesome at that point, because what happens if they beat Alabama, you know? So you look at this, there's lots of room, and I don't want to go through every single program and look at their schedules, because that's just boring. But you look at that, and you can make a case that if they keep winning, they're going to keep moving right back up and be in the hunt at the end of the season when the Final Four gets announced. It's just that they're going to have to keep winning, and they're going to win the SEC East or the SEC Championship as well. And that right there would be either a rematch against Alabama, who beat them, or it's going to probably be LSU the way they're playing. Right now, either program, most would say, if they continue on their trajectory, would be in the top four by the end of the season as well. So Georgia's, while that was a somewhat embarrassing loss by the score and the way they let some of those plays happen in the first half, you know, Alabama didn't score a whole lot that second half. I don't know how much did Alabama score? Once, 10 points maybe?
I think they just scored a touchdown, actually.
And so, you know, they did what they needed to do towards the end, corrected some things, but they had a few bad plays that really put that out of hand early from Georgia's standpoint. And you know, if they come in and embarrass Tennessee in Knoxville this week, all is right in Athens, I think. I think that they can get things back to where they need to be as far as the outsiders in their discussion, because Georgia's not out of it. Missouri, if you want to talk about another program that might be able to compete for the East, you know, Matty Mock is suspended again, locked their freshman quarterback. They got beat by Kentucky. There's probably as much improved as Kentucky is, and as happy as I am for that, it's still Kentucky that beat Missouri. So what do you see with Missouri? You see another loss or two out there on their side of things. So there's lots of opportunity for Georgia. This world is not coming to an end. While we're talking about that ledge that sometimes it's driven, I think, by sports talk. And we've got a guy up here that, and I don't even know his name, and I want to give him credit, but everything is negative. He hates everybody. I've never seen him like a team. He hates the Tennessee Titans. They're pathetic. He hates the Tennessee Volunteers because they're awful. I mean, there's no good words that come out of his mouth. And you know, if that's his shtick, that's great. But I can't listen to that because if you look at these programs and SEC or even the Tennessee Titans, there are things to be excited about these different programs. If you're a Tennessee fan, there are still things to be excited about. Defensively, I don't want to take away from Butch Jones making a few bad calls. He made a few bad calls. We'll all admit that. But his defense didn't show up. How many times did the defense just have to make one play in two different games and they'd had victories? I don't want to count them on one hand because it would keep going. And so from a defense, it's those little things. And so people are all up in arms about this, and there's talk about, is Butch Jones going to get fired? And I'm sitting here just going, just calm your jets. Look at what you really have in the state of Tennessee, and it warms my heart that they're losing. It really does. I enjoy this. But I'm sitting here I like to think of myself as a rational human being, and I'm sitting here listening to these folks talk and these radio show guys and the callers, and it's just like, do you not understand where your program was? Do you not understand what Lane Kiffin and Derek Dooley did to your program? You barely even had an offensive line to start. It does take a little time to build that depth. I mean, even when you look at a program like Kentucky or Vanderbilt in the SEC East, at least they, you know, through all the coaching changes they've had over the last few years, there's not been a coach that wasn't at least out there trying to recruit. Derek Dooley did the worst job, I think, in history recruiting for Tennessee. He didn't even recruit an offensive lineman in one draft class. So, I mean, or one recruiting class. How can you say that when you look at at those problems. Those are simple problems that if they were corrected, all of a sudden Tennessee's got maybe one loss, and their whole picture and outlook for this year is completely different. But they've built on this program and have built a great foundation. They've got some talent. They've got some issues that they're going to have to work out. And do you have to have an exciting coach? I mean, look at Nick Saban when he got to Alabama. Was he an exciting coach? Was Alabama football exciting to watch?
No, not at all. I mean, you know, lost to Louisiana Monroe the first year. So.
But it was pounding ground, right? I mean,
oh yeah.
I mean, you really didn't see those flashes of crazy offense until Lane Kiffin took over as offensive coordinator last year, doing some crazy, you know, spreading the field, lining things up, and having taking some chances. You know, Nick Saban's allowing Lane Kiffin to take more chances, I think, than any offensive coordinator in the Alabama regime. And so you look at what Alabama football was in its first 3 years, while Nick Saban got to a national championship in his third year, correct?
Yeah, third year.
You know, Butch Jones is in his third year, and he's not there yet. But, you know, Nick Saban, for all the things that he brought to Alabama, he also had some coaches, as inept as they were at least out on the recruiting trail. You know, Shula was out there hitting the recruiting trail, bringing in some recruits. So it wasn't like that there wasn't any players there. So, you know, for them to compare him to Nick Saban and say, well, and Nick Saban got his national championship in year three. Well, you know, that's great, but he also had a different program to look at and come into than Butch Jones did. And so there's nothing wrong with look what, again, I don't want to just keep going on a rampage here, but look at what Arkansas does. They're not flashy. You know, it's gonna smash mouth type of football, and it's effective. It works for them. It's when they went away from it at the beginning of the season, that's when they lost. They went back to it this year against Tennessee, and you know, you saw a victory at the end of the game with Arkansas. Their defense was exceptional. I think four possessions that Tennessee had in all of the second half of that game. You know, when you have that kind of ball control, you're going to win ball games. And it's not exciting. It's not a pretty game for either side. But at the end of the day, if you get to play in Atlanta, who cares how pretty the ball game was to get you there?
Yeah, you're right. And, you know, it's just crazy to talk about Butch Jones being fired. I mean, I can understand not being happy with it. And, you know, we even talked about preseason, how Butch Jones was going to have, you know, actually took the press conference floor and said, you know, taper your expectations. That's kind of weird to have to be able to say that. But with all that said, which I agree with everything you said, you know, I think that what affects Tennessee fans so much is they've been to that pinnacle, you know, winning the first year of the BCS championship and having such a dry spell, but also seeing I know that these programs didn't start in such a hole that Tennessee was in. You mentioned Alabama. You mentioned Auburn coming out of the Tuberville days, which they were actually really good in. Just ask any Alabama fan. But you also look at what Ole Miss was able to do with Hugh Freeze. I mean, you look at this junior class that they've had. I think a lot of people believe that Tennessee has talent like that. Maybe not as good, but pretty good. We've been talking about it for several years and how we're just waiting for the Jalen Hurds and their offensive linemen to develop, and they still really aren't there yet to be able to play SEC East winning football. And you add on losing, you know, one of the best wide receivers, like we mentioned earlier, Pig Howard, a senior who's gone, you know, I guess he's going to enter the draft or whatever he's going to do. But, you know, I understand the frustration saying that, you know, they definitely should have beat Arkansas. They shouldn't have slipped up earlier in the year, but I mean, you know, it's only week six. I mean, I know a lot of Alabama fans are ready to pack it in after we lost to Ole Miss, but I mean, come on, you can't pack it in this early. And trust me, I know it's frustrating for Tennessee fans, and it's probably even worse hearing it from somebody like me and you, Shane, talking to them. But I don't know. I mean, to build a program, it's going to take years. I mean, now if he has the same results next year, if he doesn't go to a bowl game this year or something, and you know, next year we might can talk about this.
Oh, but I agree. Next year, if we're having the same conversation, week five, week six, about Butch Jones losing games, making poor decisions, their program not stepping up. I think that's a legitimate conversation to be able to have, because now we're talking year four. These are all his players at that point. He should be able to have built on that. But a bowl game is going to be a win for Tennessee. And realistically, I think I had them at maybe 7 wins. I don't think I could have went out on a ledge and given them 8 wins. I might have. They're right there at that 6-7 win mark right now, if you look at it, because I'm going to give them a loss this week against Georgia. I'm going to give them a loss next week. Well, that's 5 losses right there. That means they're going to have to win out their next, their next set of 5 games to get to 7 wins. And that's doable, but it's not a guarantee. Vanderbilt's improved. I mean, look what they were able to do against Ole Miss a few weeks ago. They had the opportunity to stay close. Their defense has gotten much improved as far as how they're able to handle that side of the ball. Derek Mason's got them playing the right way. They've got Missouri. Missouri's going to – they've won the East the last 2 years in a row. As much problems as they have, we mentioned, they're still a good program. They've got a great defense. They did a great job keeping Kentucky's running backs in check. Had some success last week with the running, keeping the running game. So they've got a great defense. There's no guarantee that they're going to be able to get all of those games. Who knows what can happen? The Kentucky game, it's at UK. It's on Halloween. I don't want to sit here and say Kentucky's going to win that game, but they could. It depends on which team that shows up. If it's the team that showed up last week against Eastern Kentucky that had to go to overtime to win, I'm going to tell the Tennessee fans it's their game. But, if it's the team that showed up against Florida or the team that showed up against Missouri or South Carolina, well, I could say they could have a fighter's chance. So they're going to have to struggle the rest of this last half of the season to be bowl eligible.
Yeah, and this jumped out at me. We normally like to look at lines on the show. I don't know if you saw this line, Shane, but I don't know if this is respect out of for Tennessee.
3 points?
3 points. I know it's a home game, but we normally say don't you normally say a home game? That's 3 points right there.
Home game's
right?
Field goal. That is not a pick 'em game on a neutral side. I'm sorry.
Are you kidding me? I mean, that looks like free money to me. I mean, I'm no betting expert, but.
Yeah, there's another radio show host up here. I mean, you could book it in his words.
Yeah.
That's
call your man.
No, it's a different guy, but same station. But you listened. I heard that the other day. 3 points?
Yeah. That's crazy. That's crazy to me. I mean, maybe that will happen, but
it just tells you where the money is, and all the money's going on Georgia, and they've got to make it so that people are putting some money on Tennessee, so they've lowered that line so that they can get some Tennessee takers going. Man, that's a good bet. We can do 3 points.
Yeah. I don't know.
I don't like that line. That one, that's just that one. I heard that line earlier this week, and that baffled me. But now, from a line standpoint, I guess you all, as an Alabama fan, you all got to keep yours intact, because by game time, it went to a pick 'em. It went to zero, right?
Yeah, there was a lot of stats out there that still said it went back to us being a 1-point dog. But that was a crazy line in my mind, too. I mean, you should have known. I mean, I'm not a Vegas insider. I don't set the lines. Maybe they knew what they were doing the whole time. But people around, granted, I'm never betted on a sports game, so I don't know what goes into people's mind. But, you get the one time in, 7 years or not, whatever it was, 60-something games or 70-something games, Alabama has been a dog in. You really think that a 1-point line, everybody's going to put their money on just to say that they had Alabama in the game. It doesn't matter what you think is going to happen in the Georgia game. So there was a lot of late money put on Alabama. I guess a lot of happy people this week, but I don't know. That was always weird to me.
Yeah. And the thing about Vegas is it has nothing to do with
me.
Or say that again, Nick.
Oh, right before game time, I think it ended up being, plus one in Alabama, or, we were a 1-point dog, but by the end of it, being a pick 'em pretty close. So there was a lot of late money put on Alabama.
Yeah. And you know, Vegas's whole thing is they don't care how many points you're going to win by. That's not what the line is there for. And that's what, a lot of people that don't bet regularly, they don't take that into mind. They think, oh, that means that team's so much better. Just no, that's what that line has to be that way so that they can get the most, the money equally split, because Vegas lives in the middle. That's where they want to be. They want every game to be a push,
Not to get off on a tangent, but there's been a lot of, ink spilled about this, how ESPN has started, all these, they'll do updates just to update the line and all this stuff. But that's why maybe they're just trying to encourage sports betting, but I've never understood why this year they've moved towards showing the line. Like, the line is very important in College game day and all this, because we always talk about, like you just said, it is a little bit of an indicator of how people think the game will go, but that number is just arbitrary. It doesn't matter. That's not a college football evaluator saying, well, Georgia's a 1-point better team than Alabama, or and then Georgia's only a 3-point better team than Tennessee. That it has nothing to do with that.
All it has to do with is the fact that they want to get 50% of the money going on one team, the home team, and 50% of the money going on the away team. And if they do that, that's when Vegas wins. And so that's why the line moves. It has nothing to do with all of a sudden, Vegas has realized Alabama's a better team. They're going to win by 3 points instead of 2 points. That's not what it was. It was that the money was coming in, and they had to move the line to get people to bet the other way so that they can keep that 50-50 split going. And so doing that, that's what makes – Vegas money, and that's what does the line. And you're right, I haven't seen any ink about it, but I've not looked for it, but I have noticed that ESPN's finally starting to talk about the line, because there for a while, if you look at 4, 5, 6 years ago, that was a taboo thing that ESPN wouldn't touch. They would allude to the fact that there was a line out there, and Brent Musburger was notorious about it, but you wouldn't hear them say what the actual line was on a pro, but now they're not afraid to go out there and tell you. And they'll even do some baseball, and baseball I'm lost on when you start doing plus 120, plus 135, minus 110. That's too much work.
Yeah.
And so, I'd picked up on that, but it would be safe to assume that somebody else was writing about that. But I have noticed that ESPN's got out there and definitely throwing out lines and talking about that. So, well, let's talk a minute about LSU. I know we mentioned them briefly, but how lucky did they get? One person's misfortune or one state's misfortune. At the end of the day, LSU looks like the savior and the good guy, but what a benefit to LSU to get an extra SEC home game on their slate this year. when they have another chance to compete for the SEC West, and they had a game rained out earlier in the season, so they're one less game than everybody else.
Yeah, and you look at, this is really going to change the schedule for them, because they lost that first game. You also look, they had to go on the road.
Lost as in against, not played, not as in that they lost the game.
Yeah, they lost not being able to play it, just like Florida last year, sorry. And then they had to go on the road to Syracuse. So this really changes the whole landscape of their schedule. And, sure, give credit to where credit's due. It's a really great, nod that LSU is going to, out of the generosity of their own hearts, they're going to pay back all the money that they over hosting the game. So they're not going to go at a loss. They're going to just take what it takes to operate the concession stands and all of that. But any profit is going to go back to South Carolina, which is nice. But if this was a different game, not to say that it's an automatic W for LSU, because anything can happen, especially with the old ball coach. But you look at who, I just noticed that the freshman for South Carolina, Nunez or whatever his name is, isn't going to be able to go.
Yeah.
Their quarterback. So they're back to this walk-on guy or former walk-on. I mean, just think if this was a – I mean, I don't know, throw some name out there. If this is a Georgia, if this is an Alabama, this is a huge story. I mean, it's a big story now, and it's very sad.
Well, if it was South Carolina 2 years ago.
Yeah, and – but, I mean, just look at, you know, this is what I was trying to make the point earlier, Shane, before we started the show is, you know, granted, LSU does get another home game, but the point I was trying to make is LSU is still going to come on big time on top with this. I mean, I know that there wasn't really too many options, and this was the best one, I guess, you know, South Carolina agreed to it. But just think, if not only do they get a home game, but LSU, you know, a lot of people don't realize how much it takes to travel 85 or however many the travel roster is. I mean, a lot of these teams go at a loss on these trips for conference games, especially LSU would definitely fly to South Carolina. So now, even if they just don't lose any money on hosting the game and come out with a victory, I mean, that's a huge win financially. I know that nobody cares about finances and LSU will probably, you know, have a major profit for their athletic department, but still, I mean,
yeah, but
for South Carolina to have another road game.
Let's put that loss in perspective. What would their loss be? $40,000, $50,000, $100,000?
I don't know, but you know, you see, I know that Alabama and all these teams do it up big on the bowl game trips, but I've heard numbers like $7 and $8 million for Alabama to go to Miami for the national championship game. So I mean, you're probably looking at, you know, at least $100,000 or more.
Let's just even say, let's make it go crazy and say it's a $1 million loss. Is it, I mean, in the big scheme of things with the TV money, that's nothing.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's less than a percentage, 1% of their total profits. So while the income revenue thing can be a win for both programs, because South Carolina will be able to reap some profits from this, and LSU will not lose money. What I was thinking and looking at was the logistic nightmare, because now South Carolina, in less than a week, has now got to figure out travel arrangements and book hotels in Baton Rouge area. But LSU's got to find concession workers to now come in and work a game. They've got to get parking attendants. They've got to figure those things out. They've got to get food ordered in less than, you know, 4 or 5 days and get that shipped over to handle the concessions, because there wasn't a game plan for, you know, 90,000, 100,000 individuals. All the restaurants that are in the area, you know, they have to order extra food in to handle any visitors that are coming in. Even the crazy Cajuns that come from out of town, you know, that want to come in and eat, you know, these restaurants have to get their food orders in, and can they get those things shipped to them in time? Logistically, switching a game in 4 days is a nightmare. Not to mention not even looking at the dollar cost or the economic impact, you know. And while South Carolina is going to reap the profits, the economic impact to Columbia is being impacted, because the fans aren't going to travel there to play that game. So now your small businesses are going to be affected over in South Carolina, the negative. So it's not a pleasant situation for either program, realistically. While LSU does get to sleep in their own beds, everyone else in the area, you know, it's a lot of work that they're going to have to do to pull that off. And what I understand is it's not the first time this has ever happened, where they've had to flip-flop home and away for some sort of reason. But, you know, it's going to benefit LSU, because they're going to get this home game, even if it's not the same LSU crowd for, what, a 2:30 kickoff our time?
Yeah. Yeah, 2:30.
You know, even if they don't get that normal rowdy evening Cajun crowd, I don't think they'd have problems selling the tickets. I don't think they have a problem selling this out, especially the way LSU's been performing. Another opportunity to come watch Leonard Fournette against South Carolina's defense. This is another 200-yard game. So it's definitely a win for LSU, and it's probably going to be, I don't know what the line, I'd like to see what the line moved once the announcement was made when they switched venues. But I bet they're going to get more than 3 points on that one.
Yeah, probably so. I mean, it's right around 20, 19 and a half right now. So I'm sure it was, I don't know. I'm sure it moves towards LSU, or it should have at least. But you're right. You know, and the thing is you look at the impact for LSU, like you just said, on the field is a win. I mean, obviously you can talk about the economics off the field, but no matter what, for South Carolina, it is just a downer. I mean, I know that there wasn't any other options, and this was the best option, but I mean, not only do they have to play another away game now, but their entire community is devastated, at least for a little while, until, you know, the water recedes. They probably lost some practice time this week, and, you know, just having to book a plane and get hotels, like you said, on 4 days, that's crazy, because there's a lot of planning that goes into. I mean, I can't even imagine if they had to execute. I'm sure they could do it here at Alabama. That's just what I'm familiar with. But just to think about all the planning that goes on, not even having to do with the football game, like you said, restaurants around the area and just everything else. There is a precedent, like you said, but it's definitely a weird situation.
Yeah, the old ball coach is going, man, this is just salt in my wounds.
Yep.
Because this is not where he wanted South Carolina's program to be this year, I don't think. And to lose another home game. So what other teams have we not really given any airtime to? Well, Blair's not here, so we've not talked about Mississippi State.
Yeah, you know, in my mind, just really quick to hit on them, we knew how good – I mean, we were some of the few people to pat ourselves on the back for a second, and maybe Blair helped out with that, but I've always been a big Mississippi State supporter outside of Alabama. And we kind of predicted, you know, how good of a season they were going to have and how, you know, Dak Prescott was going to be a big game changer, which he was relatively unknown last year. But we are seeing this year how much that senior-led defense really made the difference last year. Because, I mean, they still have a great vertical threat and they still have the most experienced quarterback in the SEC. And, I mean, you know, they haven't played bad, but they, I mean, 3-2 is probably right where we thought that they would be. But I know last year was kind of a once in, you know, what, 10 or 15 year thing for Mississippi State. But they were winning last year with defense, and that offense was, you know, very good too with Robinson and Dak Prescott. But they... It's kind of been interesting to me to see that they're scoring less points than I thought that they would and giving up more points than I thought that they would. And that's not a good mix when you're trying to win football games.
Well, here's their problem. Would they have 5 turnovers, I think, against A&M?
Yep.
So they gave that game to Texas A&M. They realistically had an opportunity to beat Texas A&M at Kyle Field. That's not an easy task to do, is to go into Kyle Field and win out. So going to Kyle Field and having that opportunity, letting it slip through by throwing, having 5 turnovers, that's inexcusable. So they shouldn't have that loss. But you look at their team stats, Nick, and what glares out at me is not that Dak Prescott's leading in passing yards, but that Dak Prescott is their leading rusher. That's their problem on offense too. There's no balance because they have no run attack. Their run attack is Dak Prescott, and you can't win or compete in the SEC West right now without a true running back to help out the quarterback. And they're going to have to fix that to really have a shot to turn their season around and salvage some good wins, because there's some good wins left on their schedule. It's just a matter of, can they turn some of that stuff around? Can they find a running game? Can they keep from making those silly mistakes and making those turnovers, losing that turnover battle like that?
Yeah, I mean, look, I mean, they really, I mean, I know how, I didn't get to watch the game, but you look, they outscored LSU in the second half. Leonard Fournette went for, what, 150 and 3 touchdowns. So they should have won that. I mean, it was 21-19. They were in that game too. So, I mean, I don't know. It's one of those things that if you aren't, and I think we're going to see this with Ole Miss as well, you know, not to write them off because obviously they beat Alabama, but this is one of those things you're going to see. I think Texas A&M is about to get caught up in this SEC West thing, where you see that Mississippi State is probably going to beat a team like Ole Miss, like you talked about, but it's going to be another one of those years. And in the East too, we've already seen it where, you know, those middle pack of, you know, the third, fourth, and fifth teams and beyond, in each division are just going to beat each other up.
Yeah. From the West side of it, I don't know whose ball game it is yet. I mean, the way A&M's playing, the way they came off with some lucky wins, and sometimes you got to be lucky to make these things work. And sometimes you make your own luck too. I mean, you know, give Texas A&M credit. You don't just magically drop a football. You know, there's things that defense has to do to help put themselves into position to have a turnover. So, you know, it wasn't all on Mississippi State. Texas A&M did some things right. But realistically to me, right now, the way it stands, it's LSU, A&M, or Alabama's ballgame to win. I wasn't impressed by Ole Miss. I wasn't even at the beginning. It was smoke and mirrors, and they were playing, you know, Southeast School of the Blind or something for a couple of those games when they were putting up 70 points. So, you know, they got into some real competition, and Florida made exposed Ole Miss. So that's my thoughts. I didn't mean to cut you off, Nick.
No. And, you know, the good thing, I guess, for Alabama is the fact that they still have pretty much their whole SEC West schedule ahead of them. I mean, to me, the very defining – and we're going to get some answers here pretty soon because everybody's going to be playing each other. But I think Texas A&M, Alabama, that's going to give us a lot of answers. If Alabama survives that one, they're sitting, you know, in pretty good shape with Mississippi State, Auburn, and LSU remaining. And I think, you know, as great as Fournette has looked, you know, if he would have scored one less touchdown in just about every single game that they've played – they might would have lost. I mean, they even had some issues on the road at Syracuse, and you can say, well, they're playing so early and on the road, had to travel, you know, all the way up to New York. But I know that they're a great team. I don't know, you know, last year their defense wasn't nearly as good as we expected. Quarterback play still really isn't there. So Texas A&M scares me the worst, especially, you know, like you said, if they've got any luck on their side with an improved defense and the offense, you know, the way it is there. I would probably say Texas A&M and Alabama, but what, in 2 weeks we'll know that matchup. So,
yeah,
you know, Alabama may be out of it, and maybe Texas A&M and LSU. So,
and LSU does have question at quarterback. You know, can he come in, Harris come in, and actually have a game where he's got to win? And I'm not the first person to say that, but, you know, at some point you're not going to be able to rely on that run game. I think if you go up against a team that I don't think LSU will be able to run like that against Alabama, you know, as an example. So there's going to come a time where Harris is going to have to find a way to, you know, tighten up that chin strap and throw some accurate passes. If he's not, then LSU's not in this conversation. But you're right. There's going to come a point here in the next few weeks that some of this stuff, just like last year and the year before, it's going to kind of shake itself out, and we're going to be able to see which team really is. But if I'm looking at it today saying, I think realistically there are three teams that have the opportunity to compete for the West.
And, you know, somebody pointed this out. I don't know if it was on ESPN or what. I think it was actually Danny Cannell. You know, I don't really like Danny Cannell. He's had some weird things to say about Alabama, but one of the things that he pointed out is, you know, it isn't over for an, like we talked about earlier, it's not over for Georgia. It's not over for an SEC West team that has one or two losses, even a two loss SEC team. The way that the national landscape is shaking out right now, like you read, you know, you went down to top 25, you know, 20 or 30. Dominant, and you can't gauge how they're going to play because they look so great last year at the end of the year. But I think the way that he put it, and it makes sense to me completely, is there's less dominant teams and more good teams or more great teams. I mean, there's 10 teams right now, or maybe even 12 to 15, whatever you want to say, that could easily make the college football playoff. But is Utah a dominant team? No. Is Ohio State a dominant team this year? I don't know. I mean, they've won every game, but they haven't dominated. Alabama isn't a dominant team because they lost a game. So there's still a lot of room. You know, I don't know why people are saying that the SEC East is already, you know, crowning Florida the champion, or saying that Alabama or any of these other teams are already out of it. I mean, week six is, you know, far into it, but we're still, there's still a lot of football to be played.
And we're still not halfway.
Yep.
And I have told the same thing to individuals before in the past as well. I mean, you look at these programs and we're talking about them, and it's just like Alabama, and here's the example I use, is that, you know, you look at the SEC and why there are so many upsets in some people's eyes and why these games are so competitive, and you look at it, and Alabama's of the world can only get so many 4- and 5-star recruits because that's all their roster can hold. And so the way this money deal is set up and the TV deal and the prestige that the SEC has, there are more programs getting those 3-, 4-, and 5-star players that didn't go to Alabama, and they're going somewhere else in the SEC because it's the SEC. And so you're getting Kentucky, you're getting Vanderbilt, you're getting Missouri, you're getting insert Mississippi State, Ole Miss, all these other programs are able to capitalize and get some 4- and 5-star recruits. And now all of a sudden the whole level of competition inside the SEC has gotten better. And it's just made it harder for the Alabamas of the world to win out and win completely. Doesn't mean that Alabama's not any less talented than they were in the past. It just means that they're going up against better and better competition each year. We might have lost Nick. So let's while we're waiting for that to see if he comes back in, let's flip sides to this and look at the East. And I've mentioned previously my thoughts on Florida earlier in the podcast here. And, yeah, they're setting at 5-0. They're going to have a great season. But you look at what they have left. You know, there's not – that's the other thing with Florida is there's not a whole lot of losses left on their schedule when you look at that. Nick, are you back?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay. We lost you there for a minute. And so we went over to the East now, and I'm looking at Florida's upcoming schedule. And while they're still 5-0, I'm looking at it and I go, you know, they, because of the way what they have left on the schedule, if they could get past Georgia, I think they do have a pretty decent opportunity. You know, they got Missouri this week. That's going to tell a lot because we don't really know what Missouri has. Oh, I didn't realize this. They've got LSU at LSU, and then Georgia. That's a tough little stretch right there. I think there's a bye in between there before they go to the cocktail party. And then Florida State. So, you know, they've got three, maybe four games left on their schedule that are going to provide be vital for them. Missouri, I'll throw in there with that group, but you know, LSU, that's going to be an exciting game to see what they can do with Fournette. We were talking earlier. Florida's done a really good job about being able to stop the run. If they're able to do that, capitalize that on LSU. What's Brandon Harris going to be able to do down in Baton Rouge when they go down there next week? And then the cocktail party. If Georgia, you know, Georgia does hit a spiral and lose to Tennessee this week, I could see them losing again to Florida and have three losses and their season's done for. But, you know, if they get through and get by Tennessee, you know, I'm going to give that a loss to Florida. So while Florida right now is in the driver's seat for the SEC East, I'm not crowning them SEC East champions because I still think they've got to get through Georgia. And Georgia has the easier route if you want to look at what they've got left coming up. While they still have Florida, their other SEC West opponent is Auburn, whereas Florida's still got LSU. So, you know, that's potentially their loss on the West side is I don't know. What do you think?
I mean, you know, it's going to be a great, if everybody does what they should, you know, even if Florida ends up losing to LSU, that'll still be one loss for each team in the West. That's going to be some exciting. I mean, look, I watched the cocktail party last year. It was an exciting game, you know, seeing Florida play so well in that game. But, you know, just think if the cocktail party, it sounds like what, from 10 years ago or whatever, when both teams were in their prime. But what if the cocktail party is for the East this year, which it very well could be and probably should be. I mean, that's just an exciting game. And if you're just a fan of SEC football, I mean, it doesn't get much better than that. But you're right. You know, Georgia has a little bit easier schedule. Catching Auburn is their other. That looked like a difficult schedule to begin the year. And, you know, granted, they did lose to Alabama. But the way that Auburn's playing right now,
yeah, but,
you know, you would take Auburn any day over LSU.
But you look at Florida before this week, and they had Ole Miss.
Yep, that's true.
I mean, you had Ole Miss and LSU, and look what they did to Ole Miss. So, you know, that's why we play these games, and that's why we do what we do and talk about what we do. Who knows what it's going to be, but I think the good news for the East, unlike the West, is we're going to have more clarity for the East by the end of October. Unless something crazy that nobody has planned happens in November, I think the East is settled by the end of the year or by the end of October on that side of the ball. So as different as it is, it's going to be settled. The West, you're going to probably have to get to the last week of the season before you're going to know there, because it's a 3 or 4 team race. Here right now, it's 2 teams. And so, I don't know. Anything else you've got?
No, I mean, you know, if somebody's been living under a rock, you know, Auburn did dismiss Duke Williams this week. You know, that was an interesting thing. There was a lot of, you know, he was late to practice at the beginning of the year, kind of was MIA for a little while. There's been a lot of talk about him just being, you know, not an easy guy to work with, not a good teammate. And kind of like we talked about with Tennessee, I mean, it may even be a little worse at Auburn, you know, because they were the media choice to win the West this year. But the wheels seem to be falling off, and I don't want to say that because, you know, Auburn could end up, you know, winning, beating us on, you know, anywhere at any time. But it is not a good situation. You know, a lot of people were supporting Malzahn, and that was probably the right decision after we figured out that Duke went on like a punching rampage in a bar, punched like 4 people. But I don't know. I mean, that is their best threat at receiver. You look at Jeremy Johnson is riding the pine now. They're starting Sean White, who is a good high school quarterback, but you know, who would have thought that Sean White would have been the starting quarterback at week 6 for Auburn, and they would, you know, be sitting there with the record that they have. So
that Jeremy Johnson thing, we'll talk about that for a second. That's got to be in his head.
Oh yeah.
I mean, that's all it is. It's all between the ears at this point, because you can't be the coach's choice to come represent your team for media day.
Yeah.
Have individuals, not me, individuals speak of you in Heisman consideration and now be the backup. It's not a physical limitation with him. It's mental. Something mental has gone on in his head. Well, I don't know if it's just he doesn't have the aptitude to understand the complexities of the offense, or if it's strictly something in his psyche has got him psyched out and he can't do what he needs to do on the field. It's down to one of those two, because everybody knows he's got the physical capabilities. And so what happens with that, it's a surprise that Auburn has had to go through this. That's the biggest surprise, is that all of this is not known to Gus beforehand, because he did play last year. He ran drills last year. Yeah. You know, he was the second team offense, so you got to see what he could do. Where did this all come from? Maybe he just couldn't handle the pressure. There's lots of things here, but it's one of those three things.
And of course, hindsight's 20/20, and I might have brought this up when we were previewing Auburn. I never understood the hype around him, the Heisman. I mean, I think that was way out of line. But, you know, I saw him play 4 years of high school football, and he was a good quarterback, but he wasn't a great quarterback. And it's pretty easy to see guys, you know, in high school. Obviously, if you're a 5-4 or 5-star, you're going to stand out. But to me, he just wasn't an elite quarterback. And one of the things that a lot of people keep going back to, and you're right, I think it's completely psychological. I think it's in his head now. Once they sit him after naming him the starter in what, April, before even the A-Day game for them, which, you know, was probably a mistake now, if you really, unless they had some reason to do that. But a lot of people have pointed out, and I will agree, you know, Gus Malzahn's offense has worked so much better. And trust me, I've seen it work. When they had a running quarterback, or at least a guy that had the option to run, and Jeremy Johnson just isn't that guy. I mean, sure, he can run on a design play if he had to, but he's a much bigger quarterback. You know, he's about Cam Newton's size. I mean, he's a big dude, but he doesn't have the wheels that Cam Newton or Nick Marshall have had. And, you know, you look at Malzahn in the past when he was at Auburn, when they had some down years, you know, I mean, he just does not function well with the pocket passer. And I know Sean White is pretty much a pocket passer as well, but it really handcuffs this offense, because that was the greatest, you know, you look back last year, Auburn was a run first team. I mean, they passed the ball. Duke Williams was a big threat, but the thing that Alabama found so hard to stop, and a lot of these other teams found so hard to stop, was Nick Marshall on the pull. You know, you could never count him out to be able to run the ball, because he was like a second running back there.
He always had the option to run, make an audible out. I mean, yeah, it's the dynamic that Gus Malzahn and that offense works best in. And I'm like you, I never bought into the hype of none of us, I don't think, on. Yeah. If you go back to our preview, we're giving Auburn the SEC West like some people were.
And the concerning,
I've been wrong on lots of things, though. I'm not saying I'm right on everything. I'm wrong a lot. But on this particular situation, we were right.
But the concerning thing to me, too, is, you know, he has been the heir apparent for the last couple of years. I mean, there were people even thinking that, you know, we saw him play against Arkansas last year. A lot of people were like, hey, well, you know, maybe we shouldn't even start Nick Marshall. I mean, that sounds crazy now. But this was something that a lot of people here were worried about Jake Coker is, and were really hoping that Saban would just pick a guy. I mean, every minute of a game that Johnson stays on the bench and doesn't take first-team reps in practice, this starts affecting not only if you need him this year, but even next year. You know, this is a guy that, I mean, he's been through a lot. I mean, it would be tough. I mean, sure, you know, if you can't perform, you're going to have to sit down. We can't keep you if you can't win games. But, you know, I mean, I'm not saying that it should be easy to get over, because he was the guy. And then he comes in, you know, you lose a couple games, you almost lose to Jacksonville State, and now you're riding the pine. I mean, that's not an easy thing to recover from. And I think, no doubt about it, you have to do what gives you the best opportunity to win. But the more that Jeremy Johnson sits, I think the less likely it is that we see him make a rebound this year or even next year. I mean, it's hard to say that, but I don't know. If it's a psychological problem, it's not getting fixed by him sitting on the bench.
No, you're right. That doesn't make it any better. Well, Nick, how did you like doing this format versus what we've done in the past?
You know, to be honest with me, I mean, it's fun to predict games, but I like talking about, you know, like, I mean, I know it was a special situation, but having LSU to talk about, I kind of like talking about the things that surround the game and how teams are playing. And I think that serves people well, because, you know, I mean, sure, it's fun for us to pick, but, you know, how many times are we wrong, just like you said? So it saves us a little bit of embarrassment, but it gives us a little bit more opinion to inject and give our own, you know, twist to things.
Good. If you're out there listening, we'd love to hear, especially if you've been with us for a while and know what our normal format is. Tweet us at SECSRT. Let us know what you think about how this podcast went, what you liked, what you didn't like, and we appreciate it. But I kind of liked it, the free flow and the back and forth. So we'll try this again, and we'll continue with this format. But don't forget to go out there and check out Nick Jones's work on Bama Hammer. You can follow him on Twitter at @NickJones. And you can follow me on Twitter at SECSRT. Remember to subscribe to everywhere you can listen to a podcast. And we appreciate you listening in, but we will call this podcast done.